back, LA.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. It's always good to see your hat and your happy face. There you go.
That's cool, too, because I don't know if you've seen it in my Facebook post, but I grabbed a screenshot from the Gen 6 conference there, man, and there was that big old hat sitting there. I think you were on stage there and had that big old hat. It really kind of illuminated the audience there. Hey, well, welcome to the show. Hey, we're going to be talking about the Fatima deception. And, you know, when people look at that, LA, they don't really – like think it's a deception. They think it's some just sort of event that happened 100 years ago in Fatima, Portugal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, here's the backstory. 100 years ago, three children, Lucia, who was 10, Francisco, who was 9, and Jacinta, who was 7. These are very young children. And by the way, they're all illiterate. It's like these kids aren't going to school. They can't read or write. They are illiterate. all they're hearing is Bible stories at church and stories that are being told by grandfathers, elders, whatever. Small community out in the middle of nowhere. I've been there. I've actually been to Fatima, and the houses of both Lucia and Jacinta and Francisco, because they were brother and sister, they're all cousins, are still intact. You can go there, and we film there, and it's like stepping back in time 100 years ago. These were people that tended sheep. They lived off the land. It was an agrarian economy, and there were no modern conveniences at all. There were no airplanes in Portugal in 1917, no dirigibles, no blimps, nothing. So people had not seen an airplane. I mean, for us to even imagine that is like, what? But people had never seen an airplane. They'd heard about them, perhaps, but they'd never actually seen one. So these three children are tending their sheep, and all of a sudden, there's an image over this tree, over a hollyoak tree. And the kids begin to communicate with this image, but it's done telepathically. It's not done like we're talking now with audible sound. It's done telepathically, voice to skull. That troubles me like you know, because that gets into a whole different thing. That's the first red flag, in my opinion. So the kids go back. They tell their parents. The parents don't believe them. And this entity, this apparition that appears to them, states that it will be back, she will be back on the 13th of every month. Mm-hmm. So the 13th, this happens in May 13th, 1917. Mm-hmm. So June happens, and there's a gathering of people, 20, 30 people, whatever, that are there, including, I think, the parish priest at this point. And once again, the kids, she appears to the kids, they see her, but no one else sees her. They begin to communicate with this entity, and a lot of the people that are there, the 20, 30 people report hearing like a buzzing sound. When this thing shows up, there's like they're hearing an audible sound that sounds like a hive of bees buzzing. And then when the entity leaves, the sound is gone. So this is strange phenomenon. This is like very what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. And the word gets out that something's happening and people start coming. And so in July, the crowds are now swelling. The kids are being prosecuted by the clergy. Father Figuera in particular, who thought right from the get-go that the whole thing was demonic. Right from the get-go, Father Figuera believed that whatever was going on was not something good. He believed it was malevolent. He believed it was demonic. It was deception. Mm-hmm. He, in some ways, was really the only dissenter. There were others who, you know, leaned that way. But when this thing got I'm getting ahead of myself, but when October 13th, 1917 happens, that's what moves everybody over to the column. Wow, this is really amazing. This is cool. So this goes on now. It's May, June, July. The crowds begin to swell. In August, the kids are taken, and they're under house arrest because this is how crazy it's getting. And they're threatened. The kids are actually threatened to be boiled in oil unless they tell the truth about this apparition. Yeah, it's crazy. And so the clergy, the magistrates, everybody gets together and goes, in September, when you go and the apparition, tell the apparition, tell the entity, we need a sign that this is real. We need a sign. So the kids go. Mm-hmm. The apparition appears on the 13th of September. The entity says, there will be a sign on October 13th, 1917. This is what our film really zeroes in on. We never discussed the so-called messages, mm-hmm. because what we discovered with the messages, and I'm getting a little rabbit trail here, mm-hmm. with the messages is this. Lucia is 10 when all this happens, okay? When she turns 18, she's taken into a Carmelite convent, given a vow of silence, and cloistered away.
Hmm.
The secrets don't become public knowledge until 1928. So from 17 to 28, that's 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the secrets, the so-called secrets come out. Mm-hmm. We don't deal with any of that. What we zero in the film, both in Fatima 1, Harbinger of Deception, and Fatima 2, Strange Phenomena, is what happened in that field on October 13th, 1917, which leads us, that's the backstory, which leads us to this day, October 13th, 1917, 70,000 people are gathered in the field.
Mm-hmm.
70,000 people are there. They are awaiting something. They don't know what it is. They don't know what they're going to see. They're just, there's going to be a sign, and it's gone out. And so you've got this cross-section of humanity. You've got the clergy that's there. You've got professionals. You've got lawyers. Photographers are there from O Seculo, which is a major newspaper at the time. So, you know, everyone is poised, ready, waiting. And if the apparition stated at noon that it would appear. Well, noon comes and goes, nothing's happening. And at this point, the crowd begins to jeer and taunt the shepherds, the seers. And it's been raining all morning, all night, all morning. The people are drenched to the bone. You can see photographs, black and white photographs, obviously, because that's all there is mm-hmm. in 1917. A sea of umbrellas, a sea of umbrellas. The ground is muddy. People are drenched to the bone. At 1 o'clock, the clouds part, it stops raining. The people are going, well, this is great. There's the sun. But then an object moves in front of the sun, like pretend my face is the sun. Mm-hmm. An object comes like this in front of the sun, and out of the object, out of this cloud, comes an object, comes a disc shaped object. And this is what we are interested in. And I'll tip my hand a little bit here. I'll get ahead. This is in Fatima 2, which will be released in January. And I know this sounds crazy. We think we have a smoking gun. I've always believed that if a photographer was there, he must have gotten someone would have captured the phenomena on film. So what happens is the cloud moves in front of the sun, an object comes out of that cloud and begins to spin like this, wildly in the air, mm-hmm. and then falls to the earth in this zigzag pattern, and then spins again and goes back up. It does this three times. The crowd is mesmerized. People think it's the end of the world. Then there's what we call a flyby. This, whatever this object mm-hmm. is, comes over the crowd like this, 100 feet over the crowd, like this, before it goes back up and then it disappears. While this is going on, and it's from 10 to, this isn't like a little deal, like a 2-minute deal. Mm-hmm. This is 10 to 14 minutes. This is going on. This whole phenomenon is happening. And this is why we call the second film, which I'm actually in the process of editing, mm-hmm. Strange Phenomenon. But to get back to Fatima 1, which is available, you can go to Vimeo, my website, or whatever. And I guarantee you, when you look at this film and you look, hear the witnesses, the people that we interviewed, were boots on the ground, were there in Fatima. We talked to the witnesses. We talked to Fina DiArmato, who actually blew this thing out in 1978 when she had access to the original records. Our source for the entire film goes back to 1917, the handwritten original records. And people, lawyers, medical doctors, remember, they've never seen an airplane. This is what they describe. And this is used over and over and over again.
Hmm.
I looked up and saw a dull silver disc. That's the verbiage that's used. A dull silver disc. Hmm. A silver disc. A disc that moved, that spun on itself. And there's a book, I sped read it about 4 or 5 days ago. And it's called Meet the Witnesses about Fatima. And it's all from the 1917 documents. And you go in there, and I think your viewers will find this incredibly interesting. I got out of the car. Check this out. Check this. These are the direct quotes. I got out of the car. I could look straight at the sun without difficulty. Now, we all know that's impossible. It was like a disc of dim glass illuminated from behind, moving around and around, and then gave the impression of falling down. This is from a man called Mr. Godino. It was like a disc of smoked glass illuminated behind and turning over itself, giving us the impression that it was coming down over our heads. This is from Antonio Antunes de Oliveira. I looked at the sun and saw it spinning like a disc rolling on itself. I saw the people changing color. They were staying with the colors of the rainbow. Then the sun seemed to fall down from the sky. This is from the diary, another one. Mm-hmm. At 1 o'clock, the rain stopped. The sky had a certain gray clarity, but it seemed to suddenly be getting darker. The sun seemed veiled in gauze. We could look at it without strain. The gray tint of mother of pearl began changing as if into a silver disk that was growing and growing until it broke the clouds. Then the silvery sun, still shrouded in that grayish light, began to rotate and wander within the circle of receded clouds. One more. From beside the park carriages and where many thousands stood, afraid to descend into the muddy soil of the Cobre de Area, we saw the immense crowd turn towards the sun at its highest, free of all the clouds. The sun seemed to us like a plate of dull silver. It could be seen without the least effort. It did not blind or burn. All of a sudden, a tremendous shout burst forth. Miracle, miracle. And that's actually from Oseculo. That last one was from was actually in the newspaper. So this is a book which is used by people who actually believe in the Fatima apparitions to bolster, you know, the idea that the miracle of a sun was a miracle. We're saying we all know something happened, but looking at it 100 years later and all the research that we've done, it seems from the witness's own words. Remember, in 1917, Daniel, there's no words like flying saucer, UFO. That's not part of a lexicon. Those terms don't exist in 1917. And that's what we find astonishing. And when we come back on the other side of the break and we begin to talk about some of what we uncovered there, is just mind-blowing.
Mm. So are you saying that in the transcripts or the newspaper reports, they did use terms like silver discs?
That's what I read to you was from the original 1917 handwritten testimonies. Mm-hmm. That's what we draw from. Not the 28, the 32, the 45, the 1917. The people who were there in the field and saw it, that's what we draw from. There's also in the film, we show a clip from a priest. This is like, again, 1980. So the priest was a small boy in the field. And he's on film and he's saying, I looked up and I saw the disc turned tan in color. And then it fell to earth and I thought I was going to be crushed. Remember, none of these people had ever seen a UFO, an airplane. So this is their introduction to aerial phenomena. And we don't know how big this thing was, but it was fairly large.
Mm. Wow. Now, the way I've heard that is, and it's even in one of our announcements for the show, that people believe Mary coming through there. How do we get from the Virgin Mary, so to speak, and the flying discs, a silver dull disc?
This is why we actually got to Fatima on one of the anniversaries. We were there July 13th. And you got to think that this is called the sanctuary at Fatima. And millions of dollars have been poured into this place. I mean, millions. Yeah. And millions of pilgrims come from all over the world to make a pilgrimage there. And this was the day when they were moving this 4 or 5 foot statue of Mary from one end of the sanctuary into this little chapel. And there were thousands of people there waving handkerchiefs. The music was going, the orchestra, the choir. I mean, it's a huge production. And I looked at my wife. We filmed it all. I'm looking at my wife and I'm going, we're taking Mary off the table. And in the beginning of the film, there's a caveat and it says this, because I know it because I wrote it. Okay. But the caveat basically says this, that each year millions of people travel to Fatima. Millions of Muslims encircle the Kaaba stone. Millions of Hindus celebrate Guru Puja. Millions of Buddhists worship at thousands of temples. People have the right to believe what they want to believe. And we're not in the film going to disparage anyone's right to believe what they want to believe. If people want to believe it was Mary of the Bible that showed up at Fatima, mm-hmm. I'm not going to touch that. I can tell mm-hmm. you right off the bat that I don't think it was. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, Daniel, and this is what most people don't get, there are hundreds of apparition sites all through Portugal. This is in the second film. We explore this aspect. That before the Romans came, now we're back 2,500 years ago, there was ancient goddess worship all throughout the area. It was a matriarchal society. I mean, you gotta go in, you gotta be boots on the ground, you gotta peel the layers of the onion. It's investigative journalism. That's what we do in these films. So we're there, we're talking to experts, and we're peeling back the layers. And what we find is astonishing. We went to two other apparition sites where an entity appeared, one of them, 2 days before the May 13th, 1917 apparition in Fatima. And it called itself, the entity called itself the Bright Morning Star. There were also a group of psychics, and we visited one of these areas where the psychics still meet today. And it's we interviewed a psychic, and that's all on tape. He's like he's like part of this long line of psychics who were practicing automatic writing. Now, we know as Christians that automatic writing is forbidden. Automatic writing, like Madame Blavatsky, who wrote, you know, Isis Unveiled and all these occult books, would go into a trance and a force, an entity would come into her and move her hand, and she would write. Well, these group of psychics were meeting in 1917. And you got to remember, 1917, it's a very volatile year. World War I is raging. The Bolshevik Revolution has happened, overthrowing the Tsar. And communism is sweeping not only Asia, you know, where Russia is, but it's sweeping all through Europe. And there's a fear of the communist revolution. And that's, I mean, Hitler rose to power on that, blaming everything on either on the Jews or the communists. I mean, so what else is new? Monarchies are being deposed. I mean, it's a whole very unstable time. At the same time that the communists are rising to power in 1917 and World War I is raging, where, you know, tens of thousands of people are losing loved ones, in the halls of power in Great Britain, the Balfour Declaration is being dreamed up, is being set to paper, which basically states that we're going to create a homeland for the Jews, the Balfour Declaration. So this is a very, very charged moment in history. Enter the psychics. Enter the psychics who come together. And there's a group of them. It's not just one. There's a group of these guys, and they're all sitting around a table calling in the spirit guides. And one guy begins to write automatic writing, which reads from right to left. You can only see it when you hold it up in a mirror. It reads from right to left, and it says something wondrous is going to happen on May 13th, 1917, and it's signed in normal handwriting, Stella Matutina, the Bright Morning Star. And for those of us who travel in the biblical prophetic narrative, we know who the Bright Morning Star is, who that refers to.
L.A., you mentioned that there was a sound of like a hive of bees. Now, most silver disc sightings don't have any sound. That seems to be extraordinary. Was that the meteorological event as it manifested in this realm?
No, not at all. What we discovered, and we bring in an authority on modern ufology, Chase Klotsky, who appeared in our Watchers series. Chase has written books. She's a field investigator. She's incredible. And she comes on the record, and we ask her, well, what about this? And she says the buzzing noise is a very common occurrence in modern ufology. People that have encounters hear this buzzing noise and don't know where it's coming from.
Well, as a beekeeper that I am, I could be misled, man. It could be my beehive because I got eight beehives, you know. So it could be them,
I think you'd know the difference.
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay. Hey, well, listen, we got lots of questions come in for you. Now, listen, LA, a lot of people admire your work and been following you for years. So some of these questions are sort of pent up questions from other things that you've done. So it may not necessarily, some of these are not necessarily on our topic tonight, but we'll
That's
continue.
Okay.
We'll continue to come back. So let's get to a couple of these. This is Chad says, LA, did you ever do a follow up interview with the soldier who was involved in the Kandahar giant? And do you still find him credible?
I do, and so much so that we've never done anything else with other witnesses that have come forward to us. But we've had other witnesses that were either involved in it, one in particular, and fortunately, you know, you just we don't have the resources and the time and whatever to go and get everybody on film. But we had, for instance, we had at a conference. I had an active duty military guy come up to me, helicopter pilot, all right? Mm-hmm. And he stated, he told me a story. He said he was in Iraq, and he was told to go to such and such a place, coordinates, and he landed his chopper there. And when he got out, he was immediately given a promotion and a higher security clearance. Mm. And there in front of him on a crate was a biological entity covered in a tarp. And I looked at him and I said, was this biological entity a giant? And he went like this.
Hmm.
And that was it. And he walked away from my table. We've had other people that were, and what we discovered when we teamed up with Steve Quayle on this, we discovered that Quayle's giant and our giant are not the same.
Really?
Yeah, they're two different areas, two different places. And what's troubling about it, look, you got Quayle's pilot story. And I'll be honest, when I heard Quayle's pilot story, you know, the pilot that threw the giant out of wherever it was, right?
Right.
I'm going, you know, Steve, this is, you know, somebody, everybody's got cell phones. I mean, hello. Well, our guy told us that, and he was back in 2001 in Afghanistan, the Kandahar guy. When this happened, I mean, everybody was checked and rechecked, and when they wrote their reports, they rewrote their reports. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was nasty stuff. So Quayle's got his pilot story talking about flying the giant, which we use in Watchers, mm-hmm. 10, and then we've got our shooter. We had these guys contact each other and talk to each other. We had the pilot and the shooter talk to each other, not on camera. And they're talking, they're telling stuff. One guy goes, there's no way this guy's making it up because he's telling too many details that only someone who was there would know. And they've talked to each other. And one of the guys apparently is very paranoid. I won't tell you which one.
Mm.
Just very, very concerned. Mm-hmm. Because of our work on Kandahar Giant, I was approached by a spook. Someone wow. from one of our alphabet agencies, and I was threatened in March of this year. I was threatened. And I was specifically told what put me on the radar was the Kandahar giant story.
Wow.
That's what put me on the radar. And then a few months later, I'm driving up. I live in the Santa Monica Mountains, and these windy roads, one of them you can do 55 miles an hour. But it goes up through the mountains and winds up. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a 26-year-old sports car, which I love. And I'm passing a car, and I'm doing about, I'll be honest, I'm doing about 60, 65. There's nobody, yeah, I know. There's nobody on the road, and I'm having fun. I got the top down. I mean, it's just a great summer day. And I'm coming around this corner, and to the right, there's no guardrail. To the right of me, about 30 feet away, there's like a shoulder. About 30 feet away, there's a cliff. And if you go over there, you're dead. I mean, it's just, that's it. See you later. As I'm making that turn, I hear this pop, and I lose control of the car for about 3 seconds. And I'm headed towards the edge, and I take the wheel and turn it and hit the brakes. And I realize I lost control of the power steering. The fan belt on that car was cut. The entire belt, which runs, you know, the serpentine belt, which runs the fan and the power steering and the alternator, the whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at the belt when the tow driver comes up and I go, look at this. What do you think? And the guy takes the belt and he looks at it and he goes, do you have any enemies? Because there were, it was like this. There were like They were mm-hmm. bands in the belt, six bands in the belt.
Right, right.
And they were cut. Two of the bands were cut like this, straight down, and then it moved over a half an inch, cut the next two, and moved over another hand. Straight razor cuts, that's what it looked like. Like somebody had taken a razor and went slice, slice. If my wife had been driving that car, she wouldn't be here. She wouldn't know what to do. She would have gone over. Just saying.
I'll tell you what, man. Us cowboys got no use for spooks, man. We'll deal with them if we ever catch them. Another question here from the this is from our YouTube chat. We have several things going on. We have our Fast Blast, our live chat on our website, and our YouTube chat because we're live streaming to that, and we're simulcasting in our TuneIn radio channel as well. But it says, L.A., do you believe that there are clones in Hollywood?
Look, I mean, that's some real freaky stuff. I get it. Many of us have gone on YouTube. I mean, people send me stuff all the time, and I'm looking at stuff. This is where I'm at with that. Any story like that, you take and you put it on the back burner. You know about it. I don't weigh in on it. I don't discuss it. Mm-hmm. However, if you could vet it in some way, you really could vet it in some way. Now you're looking at something. But we don't know. And I mean, I've heard the stories. I know the stories. I've heard them. Mm-hmm. I get it. What I will tell you about Hollywood, which is all coming out, and we all know this, which is coming out, all the pedophile stuff, all the illicit sex stuff, the casting couch, which has been in motion, you know, for decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole place is absolutely corrupt to the nines. Mm-hmm. And yet, in the midst of that total corruption and snake pit, there are people like myself. I make films. That's what I do. I write books and I make films. There are people that love the medium of film. We love it. I mean, because it can tell a story. This is what I mean. It's like when you get the medium and what we can do today with the cameras and film, you go back 20 or 30 years ago, there's no way I could produce a film like this for what I'm producing. I mean, I produce a film for about 10 grand. But I go there and I'm out in the field. You know, we've got all these cameras and gear and drones and all this stuff. I love filmmaking. I love what it enables me to do as a Christian, to talk about the gospel, to talk about, you know, the places like in far away, like in Peru, Sacsayhuaman, Machu Picchu, Ollantaytambo, to talk about the elongated skulls, the DNA evidence. I love that. And yet it can be used to create a movie like It, which was, you know, the greatest R-rated movie, box office smash, you know, and it sucks people into all this mayhem and death and killing. So, you know, is there any hope in the movie It? I've never seen it, and I don't want to see it. More than likely not. And well, it's all about hope. And I think in our films, we give people hope. We point them to the veracity of the biblical prophetic narrative.
So what you're saying is you probably won't find a clown with an elongated skull? So, hey, man. Hey, but no, I was just thinking when you were talking about that, somebody named Lindsay Vaughn, this is my own personal question. It's nothing to do with anything, really. But she I think she is with the. She's an athlete, and she says she's going to represent America, but not the president of the United States, who happens to be a citizen of America. But anyway, she had an accident, and I was reading that, and it said the Trump curse continues, and that is, it's strange things happen to those that come against Trump. Is there any sort of thing that can go with that makes that true? Is it possible?
To quote our president, I will tell you this.
Okay? that's what he would say. Yeah.
I will tell you this. Mm-hmm. Ever since he was elected last November, 2016, the media and Hollywood especially have been all over this guy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they've been treated more unfairly than any president in my memory. I mean, mm-hmm. even Nixon. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, they hated Nixon. But the vitriol against Trump is just, it's beyond mm-hmm. the pale. Mm-hmm. And when O'Reilly has his show, he was talking to a Democratic strategist. I forget the woman's name. And he asked her, he said, and this was on camera. I'll never forget it. You can go on YouTube and watch it. Mm-hmm. And O'Reilly asked her, name me one conservative anchor on ABC. And she's like this. She can't name one. Mm-hmm. And he goes, name me one conservative anchor on NBC. Mm-hmm. Totally trapped. Mm-hmm. Crickets. Mm-hmm. Can't name mm-hmm. one. That's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he held her feet to the fire, and she had no way out of it. There are no conservatives in mm-hmm. the media. Mm-hmm. There are no Christian conservatives in the media. It's all liberal bias. So mm-hmm. getting back on track, that being said,
okay.
who's got the power? Who's got the power to break open something like Pedogate? Who's got the power to go to Saudi Arabia and after decades of bakshish, money laundering in the royal family, mm-hmm. who's got the power to break that open? One guy, and that's what he's doing. Mm. Who's got the power to go against the Hollywood elites and say, you know, you guys are coming after me with all, you know, you're saying this, that, and the other thing. What about all your sexual, you know, nonsense? Mm-hmm. Who's got the power, you know, to get someone like Al Franken, who has no right to be in the Senate, in my opinion, in the first place, mm-hmm. and Conyers? Who's, mm-hmm. you know, they're going after him with this whole Russian thing. And we're way off topic, but who cares? This whole Russian thing, right?
It was part of my sinister plan, really. But
well, there you go. It's but, I mean, think about it. It's like there is no Russian collusion. There's nothing going on. And meanwhile, you know, Hillary skates with the body count, the body trail, the bimbo eruptions, you know, the impeachment. They both lost their law licenses, the 30,000 emails deleted, and no one's looking at her. Are you flipping kidding me? It's unbelievable. Mm. So this is pushback, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it seemed like, as far as I go back, it seemed like it started with Megyn Kelly when she plotted against him to assassinate him on that on that stage there. And then after that, then her career blew apart. Now she's some third rate person doing some kind of freaky morning show, like a variety show. I expect to see jugglers come out. Show. So her career is over. I mean, then, you know, yeah, they said Trump had some, you know, some risque conversation in a bus one time. And then you have all these people with all these pictures, you know, Franken and his pictures and using the government to pay off,
Hush money
with taxpayers' money. All these people, it's like that which is done in secret is now brought to light. It's like, and all these people were against Trump, but yet they've been exposed. Now, this does seem like this manufactured Trump collusion with the Russians eventually may actually, who knows, it might point back to the people that voiced it out. And I've said on a program for LA, there's a book written called The Providential Life of George Washington. And I know one of the things that was written about him was that he was riding on his horse after the Revolutionary War, and a great Indian chief was standing there and said, that is the great one, or the great spirit is watching over him, because it says something like he had four straight shots at him and he couldn't hit him. And I think his horse was shot out from underneath him three or four times. His jacket had bullet holes in him. It seemed there's evidence of a providential life. And one more story about that. The British was chasing Washington's army, and their commanders wanted to know why they couldn't finish him off, because it was just a ragtag army. And they said every time they went to get him, something would interfere with their ability to take him out. So it does seem, you know, I'm not saying I'm the ultimate Trump supporter, but I'm just saying there seems to be something around him, because he should have been destroyed. Everybody says he should have never made it through the debates, you know, but he has. I don't know. It just seemed like there's something going on there. I don't know.
I concur. I think that, you know, I mean, it's funny that the super right wing conspiracy theorists are now saying that, you know, Trump is part of a new world order and all this stuff. I mean, Washington is a snake pit. And I've written some blogs, you know, lamarzulli.wordpress.com. And I blog pretty much, you know, every day on a variety of different subjects. You know, my own radio show, YouTube channel, I think we're up to like 69,000 subscribers now and growing, which is really good. But I tell folks, you know, all the time that what we're looking at here in America with Trump, I honestly feel he's not perfect, but I think the hand of God is on this guy. And I've stated this over and over again. The only way to drain the swamp is to have term limits, two terms. You get two terms in the Senate, two terms in the House, two terms as governor, mm-hmm. and you're out. That's it.
Yeah, that's what it ought to be.
That's the only way to bring this thing back the way it was supposed to be. You can't have a John McCain who spends, you know, 30 years in the Senate, or a John Kerry who spends X amount of decades, or Nancy Pelosi, you know, who's now calling on God. I just love that when they throw the God. You can't have it. Or mm-hmm. Dianne Feinstein or any people. They're career politicians. Mm-hmm. You've got to drain the swamp And the American people need to stand up. Need to stand up. If you're listening to this, you need to stand up and start demanding term limits. Everybody gets two terms. And it's got to be the states. It's never going to happen in Congress. They'll never vote themselves out. It's got to happen on the state level.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we'll get back to our previous conversation. But along those lines, there is a lot of spiritual events going on around both sides. I would say I know that people have prayed for Trump in the Oval Office and various things. I mean, here's a guy who's trying to get. I don't know what's it called, the Johnson Act or some kind of act that was put so pastors couldn't talk about politics. He's trying to reverse that. Last four presidents said they would move Jerusalem. He's the only one that's actually going to do it. But on the other side, there are witches casting spells. There's a spirit cooking going on, trying to fry. Yep. Hillary herself says she wants a voodoo doll to stab Trump. She wants a voodoo doll of Trump. And they're trying to contact the other side. Maybe whatever's floating around in Fatima, maybe they're trying to download that so they can, you know, access that power or whatever that is, you know, the dark side. So there's more than just the carnality of the thing. There's some spiritual wickedness here.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, in fact, my blog tomorrow will be talking about the fact that witchcraft in our country is on the rise. And over in Europe, I mean, it's all pagan over there. What spawned the Reformation, Germany and France and Switzerland, has now become they're pagans. They're all neo-pagans. I mean, there's all these festivals now which are sucking in our youth. Witchcraft is sucking in our youth. I mean, we are in a post-Christian era. Why would anyone attend a spirit cooking event like Podesta did? I mean, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Why is it that the occultists, Beyonce, Madonna, Katy Perry, all are around Hillary? I mean, it's deliberate. These people are all, in my opinion, these people are all in bed together. Mm. They all serve the same God, mm-hmm. the God of this world. Mm. And Hillary was a shoo-in. I mean, if you looked, and I did this daily before the election, I would go to the polls. I would go to, you know, Real Clear Politics. I would go to Gallup. I mean, like all these different polls, mm-hmm. and looking at where we were. And they had Hillary up by 5, by 10, one poll, 15. Mm-hmm. Hillary was up. Hillary was up. It was an absolute shoo-in. There's no way she's not going to lose this election. And there was only one paper, one poll, and it was the LA Times, a liberal bastion, a bastion of liberal thought. But the pollster, you know, went with the data. He had Trump up by 3. Hmm. The day before the election. And guess what? The whole blue wall dismantled. And what lost the election for Hillary, because she's so out of touch with common America, and she's, you know, she is who she is. I've never met her. I don't want to meet her. The woman terrifies me. And so is Bill. I mean, that when the debate...
You don't want on their list.
Yeah, when Trump bought the accusers, you know, Broderick and all these people, you know, the three women that he basically raped and abused that were there, and that face crack when he's like this looking over, the body language, the face crack, it's the face crack of a century. I mean, that's what it is. And so when Hillary lost the election, she was so sure that she was going to win when she said this, and I'm sure you guys have all heard it, you know, 50% of Donald Trump supporters can be summed up in this way. They can be put into a basket of deplorables. You know, Islamophobic, homophobic, xenophobic, you know, racist, wow. Sexist, assist. And that's who she really is. That's what she really thinks of millions of Americans just like you and just like me. Oh, because I want a wall built to keep the drugs out, that means I'm xenophobic. Mm-hmm. Because I would say we should limit immigration from Muslim countries, and that makes me Islamophobic? Hello, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want a transgender six-year-old in first grade going into my daughter's bathroom, that makes me homophobic? Are you flipping kidding me? This is how far down the rabbit hole we are. Mm-hmm. And that's what lost her the election. When people heard that, they just went, I stood up at a conference, at the Koinonia House conference. I was there in October, right before the election. And, you know, there was like 900 people in the room or whatever. And I was on fire. And I just said, if you don't get out and you don't vote, the witch with a B That's what I called her. The witch with a B, Hillary. The witch with a B. There's 900 people at a Christian conference. And of course, you know, somebody wrote, and they, how can you possibly? Well, let me see. Jesus called them a brood of vipers. Hello. Mm-hmm. You know, right? Whitewashed walls, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I said,
Grecian slow bellies. I like that one.
Yeah. If she gets in, it'll be the end as we know it. And I think that look, I don't know where Trump's at, whether, you know, in his heart. I have no idea. But I do know this. The fact that he's got the gumption to go, we're moving the embassy to Jerusalem because that's the capital of Israel. Let's quit screwing around with this stuff. And you gotta understand that all the presidents are playing footsie with the Saudis because of the oil. Trump's not doing that. Mm-hmm. And this is what blows me away. If they follow it, guaranteed, it'll all point back. All this dirty money laundering, it'll point back to the previous administrations going as far back to Bush number one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it will go back to, which means everybody's dirty since the Kennedy assassination, since JFK was killed. From that moment in time to the present day, till Trump got elected, every single president, in my opinion, was in bed with these guys.
Well, sure.
I could be wrong. Well, I hope I am.
George H.W. Bush, when he, the guy said, I don't remember where I was when JFK got shot.
Yeah.
He was down there. You know,
hello. Yeah,
they're in on it, man. You talk about being in on it. But hey, getting back to this, you said that there were multiple apparition sites. Are there any apparition sites per se in the United States?
Yeah, there was a place in Georgia, which I actually, at the end of Fatima 2, which will come out in January, lamarzulli.net, shameless plug. Folks, you need to see this stuff because it's like at the very end of the film, I do a composite of apparitions and sun miracles in modernity happening right now. Conyers, Georgia was just a few years ago. And, you know, the sun is pulsing and doing this. Apparition sites, 2009, outside Cairo, Egypt. Over a Coptic church. Everybody's doing this, you know, clapping and there it is. It's a blob of light. It's all it is. It's a blob of light over a Coptic church.
Now, is it possible, I've discussed on the show, there's a phenomena out there called screaming at the sky. Have you seen that?
Yeah, this is where the snowflakes are, they're so pent up because they're not getting free stuff. You know, it's like they're hearing an opposing point of view, which they just don't know how to handle. You know, I want my coloring book and my little juice box, and I want a certificate telling me how wonderful I am. Nonsense!
You're cracking me up over here, man.
Grow up.
So I mean, and then along that, in the sort of the pagan rituals, don't they have a lot of dances like where they just stomp and start screaming, or maybe hurt themselves eventually? Forcing some manifestation of some sort of entity?
I mean, when you get into the occult, there are rituals that are used to put people into an altered state. Mm-hmm. And in that altered state, entities can come. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting is all this is counterfeit, and this is my blog tomorrow, of what the church should be doing. We have the gifts of the Spirit of a living God. We're told that in the book of Acts. You know, the gift of speaking in tongues, the gift of miracles, the gift of healing, the gift of the discernment of spirits. And most of these gifts are not being used in the body of Christ today. And sometimes when they are, it's like it's full-blown craziness. People are running around, swinging from the chandeliers, babbling like morons. Everyone's speaking in tongues at the same time, which in my opinion is unbiblical. Paul tells us, he gives us in Corinthians, the way if a person's, you know, two or three speak in tongues, but there's got to be an interpreter. If there's no interpreter, then you're silent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's rules to do everything decently in order, not all this craziness that we see. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was one revival a while back, 2008, whatever, and I won't mention the guy's name. I think, in my opinion, it was a counterfeit revival, absolute counterfeit revival. Whenever you've got gold dust coming down and oil flowing from a Bible and all this stuff, no one's testing the spirits. Mm-hmm. It's counterfeit. When the Spirit of a living God comes, he brings repentance. And there's a holiness where people, I've seen it. I've been involved in it. People usually fall on their faces and begin to weep because they realize the depth of our depravity. And they realize the love of the Messiah. And then in a corporate setting, when the Spirit of a living God can move in the churches, and, you know, God can speak to his people, God can heal, and I've seen all this, but for the most part, it's kept down. Mm-hmm. We have our, I can tell you, in 99% of the churches tomorrow that will get together, the worship team will start with a couple of fast songs, they'll bring it down into something slow, and then at the end of that, someone will stand up with a cheery voice and read the morning announcements, mm-hmm. and then right. they'll have a, the men will come forward and receive the morning offering, right. and someone will sing, we'll have some special music, mm-hmm. the pastor will get up for 25 minutes, there'll be 30 seconds of corporate prayer, the pastor will get up and say something for 20 minutes, most of the time not out of the scriptures, and then we'll sing a song and go home. Jesus warns us that in the latter days, they will have a form of religion but deny its power. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the church in 2017.
Which, by the way, speaking of that, when I was at the Gen 6 True Legends conference, I admire the way that you handled the lady down in front that started screaming out. I guess she was screaming in tongues or...
Yeah, she was speaking in tongues, and I looked at her and I said, you're out of order.
Yeah, you
There's
did.
There's no interpreter, and this is not the time for that. You're out of order.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, come on.
Yeah, that's excellent. I thought you handled that very well.
Praise the Lord.
Well, listen, we're right at the top of the hour. We're going to take a five-minute break. We're going to take you out of the picture but leave the connection on. And I've got in my background now your Fatima DVD. But what can people get? Where can they get these things at, L.A.?
LaMarzulli.net, LaMarzulli.net. You can also go to Vimeo and watch it. Our Vimeo channel is The Watchmen Chronicles, The Watchmen Chronicles, or L.A. Marzulli on Vimeo. We got everything on Vimeo right now, and you know, Fatima 2 is in the works. And, you know, folks, look, I'm just telling you this, that when you buy our products, it keeps us going. You know, we're not raking in the dough here, but we plow it into the next project, and we're in the field doing investigative reporting, LaMarzulli.net.
Okay. All right, LA, we'll be back with you in approximately 5 minutes.
Great. Thanks, Daniel.
Okay. All right, everybody, you're watching and or listening to the Edge Television Broadcast. My name is Daniel Lott. We're going to take a five-minute break. And welcome back to the Edge Television Broadcast. My name is Daniel Lott. If you miss any of this exciting broadcast, it will begin to replay in our main player directly after the show. We'll extract the high-definition video, and we'll put it up in our YouTube channel, and we'll put it into our TuneIn radio playlist. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And a lot of times my ranting points, I actually put on my Facebook feed, so you can follow me there. Now let's go back to our live Skype channel, and welcome back, L.A. Marzulli. L.A., welcome back.
Great to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. You know, in the first hour we started out talking about Fatima and the Great Reception. By the way, I have that. It's excellent video, and I do recommend people get that.
I appreciate the plug. Thank you so much.
Well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't give you a plug, but it wasn't worth it, L.A. I'm not that type of guy, but it has so much interesting information, and it brings us, as you say, sort of in the subtitle, a miracle of the sun or a harbinger of deception. Can you talk a little bit about what that deception might be?
Well, you've got 70,000 people sitting in that field waiting something, and they didn't know what they were going to see. I mean, they were just told there was going to be a sign. We talked about that before the break. There was going to be a sign, and so there are 70,000 people waiting in the field for something. And then this, you know, the cloud comes in front of the sun, and an object comes out of that and begins to spin and dance and the phenomenon lasts between 10 and 14 minutes, okay? And what happens is that these people are looking at this and they immediately believe that it's from God. Mm-hmm. We are told in the biblical narrative to test the spirits. We're told that, which means that if we're told to test the spirits, that means we're going to see stuff which is counterfeit. Otherwise, why are we testing it? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All this has been lost in 2,000 years of pageantry and religiosity and all this crazy stuff in the church. We're told, when was the last time you heard a sermon or a lesson or a teaching on how to test the spirits? You never ever have, you know, guaranteed. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. I've been going to church mm-hmm. for 37 years. I've never heard a comment on that. And I'll tell you, this is how you test the spirits. Mm-hmm. It's real simple.
One of the things I heard you say at the, I believe it was at the Gen 6 conference there, is that you said, why do people come to me and tell me their stories. They see something in the sky or something happened to them. And you go, it's because nobody else believes them. They go to the pastor and the pastor will say, maybe you need to talk to elders or maybe you need to see your doctor. That's
right.
I know somebody whose house was haunted and they said they went to several churches in the area and they basically got booted out, said, we can't help you. And at least one of them, and I think two, suggested to go see a psychiatrist or get some medication. Is that where we're at with it? Is that the job of the church, is direct people into the psychological aspects of health?
This goes back to our previous conversation. The church has abdicated its role in the supernatural. We have a form of religion but deny its power. When was the last time, as I stated, have you ever heard a sermon on how to test the spirits? It's really simple. Did Jesus come in the flesh? If you see something, you challenge it. Did Jesus come in the flesh? And if you hear anything else but yes, you know what you're dealing with. Or if the thing manifests and starts doing something crazy, you know what you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Rebuke first, ask questions later. Put on the whole armor of God, Ephesians 6. Walk in that. When was the last time you heard a sermon on that? Yeah. I mean, I'll ask people, how many of you put on the armor of God? There's 1,000 people in the audience. Mm-hmm. What, I get 20 hands that go up? Mm-hmm. Most people don't even know how to do it. We've abdicated our role in the supernatural. Mm. All they want, go sit, pay, tithe, go home, have your pot roast, don't rustle the boat. The bottom line is that church should have gone to that house. They should have anointed the doorpost with oil. They should have cast out any foul and unclean thing in that. If they were unsure about it, they should have fasted and prayed, got themselves gone before the Lord, fasted and prayed before they go to the house. They should find out whether there was a murder there or spilled blood. They need to do all this stuff. Advocate. No, you need some Xanax. You go to a psychiatrist. We don't do that. But come to the potluck on Wednesday night.
Right.
It's like you want to scream. You want to scream. Meanwhile, the youth go to these things and they go, what's here? And they're being drawn into Wiccan and witchcraft because stuff happens. Mm-hmm. There's power there.
Well, yeah, another big draw for him is the classic bean supper. But listen, man, hey, I gotta confess something here, man. You called me out. You don't know. You called me out at the Gen 6, but maybe there's some people around you who's also calling out, and I think you just alluded to it, and that is rebuke first, check out things later. I have seen UFOs, LA, and rebuking just didn't, like, it just didn't come up. It's like, okay, that's a UFO. What is that thing doing there? You know, I didn't think, right. Well, I got a rebuke. So I thought, hey, man, maybe I'll try that next time.
Well, hopefully there is no next time. But if you see it, rebuke first, ask a question later. And what do you do by that? You say, well, Lord, rebuke you. Mm-hmm. You say, Father, if it's not from you, if this is something from a dark side, I pray now that you would cause your angels to come and remove this thing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Rebuke first, ask questions later. Mm-hmm. Say things like, the blood of a lamb be upon you. Mm-hmm. You know, the blood of a lamb. Mm-hmm. The Lord rebuke you, and you shout it out. We're not taught that.
Okay. All right, we got this question come in for you, and I think some pictures out there that might be authentic, I don't know, you're obviously an expert on that, seem to show a spinning object of some sort. It looked like maybe like a vortex. So a question came in and said, was the spinning object, was it a possible vision of Nibiru?
No, it had nothing to do with Nibiru. Mm-hmm. And what photograph are you talking about?
Well,
are they saying it was a photograph of an object?
There is a Fatima. Yeah. Now, see, it could be, like you said earlier, it could have been photoshopped. I've seen that when I was getting information for the show. There was like a spinning sort of vortex looking thing that was in the Fatima background. But I also seen the ones with the cloud and maybe something coming out from behind it.
That's a hoax. That was proof. Life magazine did that from 1924. It's a hoax. I mean, they show this thing. It's a hoax. It was not. What we have, and this is in Fatima 2, which is coming out in January. So get Fatima 1 so you're oiled up and ready to go for Fatima 2. Because what we found, this is all the research that we did. We have a man whose name is Jose Machado, who has a degree in photographic analysis, who in 2008 was given admission to the sanctuary in Fatima, where he examined the glass plates from 1917. Mm-hmm. And all I can tell you, because I got to wait, all I can tell you is we think we have a smoking gun.
Oh, I am looking forward to that. All right, Kevin, and this is from our Fast Blast. Kevin in Massachusetts says, a good friend of mine, Byron LeBou, has since passed, but was very interested in the Shroud of Turin research you did. Is there anything new on that?
That's very, you know, we covered that in one of our watchers. It's one of my favorite topics. We're selling a DVD. Here we go again. But that's how we make our living, folks. And those of you who are listening, you have your job and this is my job. But it's called The Best of Watchers. And we took that whole Shroud of Turin segment and it's in there. And again, LAMarzulli.net. Mm-hmm. Nothing really new. And Barry Schwartz talks about this in our interview with him. I think in 2002 or three, whatever, when John Paul was still alive, this textile team from Germany went in and cleaned the shroud, steam cleaned the shroud and stretched it. I mean, it's just like you want to scream, because when they did that, they destroyed any forensic material that we could have used or later scientific teams could have gone, and it's all gone. Mm. It's all gone. And you know what, folks? That's deliberate. Because the Shroud of Turin, in my opinion, is God's calling card. Mm. It's not done by the hand of a man. It's not a painting. It's and you know, guys like Joe Nickel who try to debunk the Shroud, and he holds up his little demonstration. It doesn't look anything like the Shroud. Nonsense. The forensic image on that Shroud shows a brutal scourging of a man who had long hair and wore a cap of thorns. And the scourging was so brutal that it was all over his body except the area right over the heart. And the executioners knew if they flogged him there, they would kill him. That's why he falls three times on the way to Calvary, because he's basically been eviscerated to a bloody mass of flesh. What they did to him was so inhuman, it's beyond the pale. Mm. And the shroud shows that.
Mm-hmm. Show that.
Yeah, how does a 14th century forger know the forensics of a Roman flagrum and what that looks like on the body? How does a forger know about Billy Rubin coming out, the mixture of blood and water from the piercing on the side? How does a forger show that the nail prints come in like this at an angle? It's in the back of the palm of the hand, but the nail is set at an angle, so it comes back in here at the edge of the wrist. That's what pins him. I mean, it's not through here like this. It's at an angle, and it comes out here at the wrist, at the back. So that's how they pinned him to the cross. Well, how would a forger know that? And then how would a forger know that, well, I'm going to create a negative because hundreds of years from now, they'll have photography. So when they take the picture of my negative, it'll be a picture of the actual picture. When Secundo Pia took his glass plate, right?
Okay.
Going back to the glass plates. Okay. He takes a picture and he's in his lab. He's in his dark room with the chemicals and he's got the glass plate, the shot of the head. And all of a sudden the image comes up and it's not a negative. It's a positive, because the image on the shroud is a negative image. And so when you take a picture of it, you get a positive. And he's sitting there and he almost dropped the glass plate. He was astonished. And you can't make this stuff up. You can't make it up. It's God's calling card. It's real.
Well, you know, I've been toning down my language a little bit out of deference for you, L.A., but steam cleaning the shroud pisses me off, man. I mean, come on, really? Did somebody really do that?
They did it, and it was deliberate. And when they did that, they destroyed all the forensic evidence of that artifact. Hmm. It was absolutely deliberate. Absolutely deliberate. Because there's a group of people that don't want anything that points back to the veracity mm-hmm. of the biblical prophetic narrative to be shown. Mm. And that's what we do. That's why, look, our research on the elongated skulls with the DNA, the Nephilim, points back to the veracity of the biblical prophetic narrative. Mm. Our work on Fatima shows us that we are in a window of time where Satan can appear as an angel of light, that we're told to test the spirits. And that's what we do. We point back to the veracity of the biblical prophetic narrative, and a lot of people don't like that.
Well, sounds to me like they bleached it, just like Hillary Clinton bleached all her hard drives, man. All right, here's a question.
Isn't that great?
The classic questions coming in, L.A., you probably got it 1,000 times, and people still aren't clear on it. Here it comes. Are UFOs really demonic fallen angels?
Well, they're not demonic fallen angels, but they're being flown by the dark side. There's no doubt about it. These are real craft. The Book of Enoch tells us that when the fallen angels came, there was a quid pro quo. They showed mankind early technology. They taught them the art of weapon making. That implies a foundry, you know, melting of metals, knowledge of metals, and all this. We in our film, in their own words, UFOs are real. Which again, go to thewatchmanchronicles.com. You can go to my website. You can. It's an hour and 37 minutes. In their own words, we actually are talking to people that have had encounters with UFOs. Okay, everything from the first encounter, you know, orb in the sky, disc in the sky, to being taken, to being abducted, to being floated through walls. It's all in that movie. Hour and 37 minutes in the field, talking to the people. And then Wesley San Giorgi, to the miracle of computer generated imagery, brings these stories to life. So you're just not watching a bunch of talking heads. Mm-hmm. We interviewed a couple who knew a man who was OSS. OSS is the forerunner of the CIA.
Okay.
And this guy was a colonel, Colonel Hill. He was OSS. And he was in World War II. He was an interrogator. Deathbed confession. Deathbed confession. They asked him, what about Roswell? A month later, after he told them the story, he passed away. So basically, it's a deathbed confession. He said that he was flown into New Mexico, Roswell, New Mexico, 48 hours after they discovered the craft and the bodies. Mm-hmm. And that what crashed there was not a weather balloon. And that the material was taken to Wright-Patterson.
Right.
And that he made contact, tried to make contact with one of the entities who was still alive. And that the most distinguishing feature, other than the very large head and the dark eyes, was that this thing had six fingers. It had six fingers, mm-hmm. not five. Mm-hmm. All that testimony is on the record in the film. So what are these things really? In my opinion, they're being held back. We go up, they show up. It's a saying I've been saying for the last year. We go up in the rapture, they show up. There are so many sightings right now that they can't even keep track of them. Mm-hmm. There are in the thousands of sightings. So why haven't they just manifested? Because it's supernatural and they're being held back. But the craft are real. The craft are real.
All right. This question came in for you from Gord. It says, a question for L.A. Would the church crucify Jesus if he came back today and exposed them?
Well, he's going to come back and he will expose them. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. Very interesting to see what happens. There's a book by Dostoevsky, Anna Karenina. Mm-hmm. Or the Brothers Karamazov. I got the wrong one. The Brothers Karamazov. Mm-hmm. And in that, there's a set of chapters, which in the first edition, by the way, was not published because it was deemed too controversial. And it's called The Grand Inquisitor. And in that chapters of books, which you can read now, which is absolutely fascinating.
All right.
The pompous cathedrals of the Russian Orthodox Church, Jesus comes and he's in prison because he's healing people, healing the sick.
Okay.
And there's this conversation between the Grand Inquisitor and Jesus in the jail cell in modernity. It's set at like, you know, before the Bolshevik Revolution.
Okay.
It's set at the tail end of the 19th century. And fascinating book. And basically, the Grand Inquisitor states, you know, is it you? And if it is, you know, we don't want you here. You're ruining our whole deal. And I realize that's hard for people to get their heads around. But you got to ask yourself, when was the last time in your church did you ever see the Spirit of a living God move? When was the last time someone was healed? When was the last time a miracle happened? When was the last time God spoke through his people? And we're not trained to do it. And so that's why when there's so-called revival, when the Spirit of a living God shows up at a church, no one knows how to handle it because they don't know. And guaranteed, if the Spirit of a living God shows up at your church, every demon-possessed person within 50 miles will make a beeline
wow.
to your church the following Sunday. Guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed. I've seen it. That's what happens.
Wow. All right. Question for you says, do you think Nibiru could be wormwood in the Bible?
Look, how many times do we have to get fooled with Nibiru and Planet X, right?
It's
we were
everywhere.
Fooled in 2012. We interviewed Marshall Masters and our watchers. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to happen. This guy was so sure because his spirit guides uh-huh. are telling him 2012, Nibiru is coming, Planet mm-hmm. X, the end of the world, blah. And I'm sitting there going, not so fast, citizen. Mm-hmm. Then later on, we interviewed another gentleman. His name is escaping me. And this guy really has done his homework. Burchard. And is it Neil Burchard? I can't. Anyway, he comes on the record in our Watchers. Guy Burchard comes on the record in Watchers.
Okay.
And I go, Guy, I'm not a believer here. I've been fooled once. He goes, we're going to see it in the fall of 2015. So, and if not 2015, we will see it in the spring of 2016. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm at. Okay. We all know about Planet X and Nibiru. There's all this phony nonsense out on YouTube, which is just nothing more than sun flares and sun dogs. Okay. Mm-hmm. Put it on the back burner and watch what's really going on. Jerusalem, okay, is now going to be the capital of Israel. That's huge. That's real prophecy coming about in our times. It says Jerusalem will be a cup of trembling to all the nations. Hello. Mm. Wake up to 2017. That's what's really going on.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is the earth is flat.
It absolutely is. All day long, flat.
Hey, by the way,
No, it's not.
You sure? Look, man, I was on the internet the other day, and there's a guy got a DVD out, man. Hey, by the way, tell Peggy that Susan and I are praying for you guys to be safe out there in California.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
How close are those fires, L.A.?
They're about 30 to 40 miles away from us. We have friends who have lost houses. If the winds will die down, they'll get a handle on it. But the winds are supposed to pick up again tomorrow.
Mm.
And that's not good.
Now, what about those Santa Ana winds? Do those things still blow around out there?
That's what's happening. We had in our canyon, we had record winds of 73 miles an hour sustained. Mm-hmm. 73 miles an hour sustained wind, which you can't fight a fire with that. You can't. That's like you evacuate. It's all you can do.
Another question. I because you're a Californian man, what do you guys think about making the entire state a sanctuary state?
I think it's insane. I think it's absolutely insane. The whole Kate Stanley verdict was, which shows us how deep down the rabbit hole we are. The bottom line, this guy was deported numerous times, and if they had done what they were supposed to do, she'd be alive today. Mm-hmm. Was it a freak accident? I don't know. I wasn't there. Apparently, the gun had a hair trigger. This guy was fooling around with the gun, and it ricocheted off the concrete and hit her and killed her. Okay, so he's acquitted, but we're not done yet. The bottom line is this. That, and this is the dirty little secret, that all the illegal aliens coming across the California border, we are taxed, our infrastructure is taxed to the tune of $10 billion a year. Who pays for that? Who pays for that? Why is it that the federal government on a monthly basis subsidizes Los Angeles to New York? Because if they don't do it, the entire infrastructure will crumble. So it's all propped up. No one wants to do anything. Why is it that everyone in America, almost every family in America has someone that's gone through or is going through rehab? That wasn't the case 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. 50 years ago, no one knew what rehab was. Mm-hmm. Build the stinking wall.
Whoa.
Throw the wall. Build the wall.
Man, are you a immigrant hater?
No.
Okay. Thought I'd ask.
Look, I'm Italian. We came over here 1898. We're immigrants. If you want to come here, come here the right way. But don't go running across the border, you know, and the whole thing, I'll have a couple of kids here, they'll be American citizens. It's all nonsense. It's got to stop. It's all the bleeding. And then demand free this and free that. My counter argument to this is this, okay? Let's get some charter buses. We'll get just 100 normal American middle-class people.
Okay.
We'll get some buses.
Okay.
We'll charter. We'll go across the Mexican border.
All right.
And we'll drive into Mexico City. Okay. We'll demand free health care. We'll demand to go to their schools. We'll demand, we want to stay here now. Is this a sanctuary city? We'll demand that. You know what will happen? We'll be rounded up and we'll be put in the Huskow. That's what's going to happen.
Wow. Hey, I want to get on that bus just to try, just to make them mad down there. All right. Another question come in. It says, L.A., what is your position on CERN? Maybe CERN's trying to create another Fatima deception.
CERN is very dangerous, in my opinion. I don't think we know the half of it. It's built over the ancient temple of Apollo. That's deliberate. The ceremony that opened up the tunnel to CERN, mm-hmm. with the horned goat guy,
right.
That's all deliberate.
He a freak.
Another ceremony, a ritualistic human sacrifice, was done at CERN. That's on YouTube. You can see that. The fact that they've got Shiva, the god of destruction, there, it's all deliberate. What they're trying to do, in my opinion, and Anthony Patch will back me up on this, and Anthony's work is stellar on CERN, they are trying to open up a gateway, an interdimensional gateway, to let these entities back in. This is how far down the rabbit hole we are.
Well, I'm wondering, is it possible that what happened in Fatima, I mean, could that not have been maybe something on that side opened their own portal, and we're on this side with CERN trying to open up the same portal or a one like it?
These are gateways, which, again, the ancient goddess worship, and we talk about this in great detail. Dr. Michael Lake comes on the record. Derek Gilbert from Skywatch TV comes on the record talking about the ancient goddess worship. Carl Teetrip comes on the record in Fatima 2, Strange Phenomena, talking about the ancient goddess worship, which was rife through all of Portugal. And these goddesses are fallen angels. And from that, there's a term which I have coined. It's called interdimensional transgendered entity, because there are no female angels. And yet there's goddess worship. And these goddess worship, these goddesses can appear sometimes as male, other times as female. Interdimensional transgendered entity.
And isn't it interesting? Hang on. Let me write that down. I love that term. What's that now? Interdimensional
transgendered
entity. I like it. All right, go ahead.
That's what these goddesses, which have never been deposed in these regions. When I got there, when I got to Portugal, I was hit with such visceral spiritual warfare. I've never experienced anything like it in my life. And I didn't know about the ancient goddess worship. Mm-hmm. I had been studying up and boning up on it before I got to Portugal. So the next day, I get hit with this visceral attack from the enemy. And I go to the guy I'm interviewing, and I go, I depart from my script, and I go, listen, what was here before the Romans came? He said, ancient goddess worship. The entire peninsula was steeped in a matriarchal society which worshiped the sacred feminine. Is it too far of a step or a stretch to believe that the entities that were appearing not only in Fatima but all over Portugal and demanding worship are in fact these same ancient gods and goddesses coming about? And that's how we leave it up. All we do in these films, we show the evidence. We don't preach. We show the evidence. Here's what we discovered. You be the judge. You tell me what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. You tell me.
Ellie, in my research on before this broadcast, sometimes I saw things that said they were three girls, but I think is it two girls and one boy, isn't it?
Two girls and a boy, yeah.
Then what, have you seen that? Is that an error in reporting or?
That is an absolute error. It's Lucia, Francisco, mm-hmm. and Jacinta. Mm-hmm. Lucia was 10, Francisco was 9, Jacinta was 7. Very young children. They were also, listen to this, and you know, people don't know the story, but it's there. The three children, the entity gave them something to eat and to drink. Lucia, yeah.
What?
Lucia and Jacinta ate and drank. Only Francisco ate but did not drink. So Lucia and Jacinta could see and hear the entity, which was voice to skull. Not audible. Voice to skull. They heard it inside their heads. Francisco could only see it. Could only see it, not hear it.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
All right. Okay.
Fatima, what happened there is very deep. And we're not here to disparage anyone's belief system. Mm-hmm. If they want to believe it was Mary of the Bible, hallelujah. Go for it, man. Believe what you want to believe. But if you're interested in finding out the facts from a 1917 handwritten documents, Fatima 1, Miracle of a Son, or A Harbinger of Deception, right, or Fatima 2, Strange Phenomena, that's the place to go and get the real facts.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I thought I saw apparition of Mary on my potato chip. Should I like rub some beads or something? You think I like get something good to happen?
We call that Jesus in the taco. We do. Where people see, have a taco, and they'll show it up, and there's an outline of what looks like Jesus's face. It's like that has nothing to do with anything. Nothing to do with anything.
Why does it seem that, and I appreciate you saying you don't disparage anybody's religion or anything like that.
Right.
I don't have a problem doing that, but I'm a cowboy, man. What can I say?
There you go.
I'm ornery. But what is it that the Roman Catholics always have these apparitions going on? They got the crying Mary or the crying Jesus going on. They got the apparitions up in there. They're doing all the exorcisms. And meanwhile, the evangelicals are having bean suppers. I mean, you know, what's going on here, L.A.?
Well, the evangelicals will have, you know, gold dust and feathers. All right. This stuff appeals to the flesh. No feathers. One is challenging the spirit. Right. No one is you know, rebuking first, asking questions later.
Right.
No one is testing the spirits because they're not taught how to do it. No one's testing the spirits. I mean, when at the end of our at the end of Fatima II, these people are talking about this. Mm-hmm. They're in front of a Coptic church in 2009, and this apparition is glowing. And it's there for like night after night after night. And it's not just for a minute. It's there for a good long period of time. And it looks like it's, you know, here's the apparition. It's got this like blue thing. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. Mary. Mm-hmm. It's just this blob of light. Mm-hmm. And then next to it is a smaller blob. That's supposed to be the baby Jesus. And then behind them is another blob. That's supposed to be Joseph. And then behind that's another blob. That's supposed to be Gabriel.
Wow.
If I were there, I would have yelled at the top mm-hmm. of my lungs, "Begone, you foul and unclean thing. The Lord rebuke you." That's what I would have yelled.
Mm. Hey,
the Lord rebuke you, you foul and unclean thing. You cast it out. Mm-hmm. You get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Remember at the Gen 6 conference, you said, how many here have seen something they can't explain? Maybe a UFO or something. And all these hands, there's like 2,900 people there. And then you were saying, you see that, pastors? You know what that told me? That told me that God's people are starving. They've been given this milk toast for so long. You know, the Bible says by time you ought to be teachers, you still have one need teach you. And that's because the people keep getting these programs, man. You gave it like a 3-step program, you know, the song, the mini sermonette and the offering, and then get out of here. And then, you know, who knows what's going on when they leave, but you know, I mean, but God's people are starving now. How can we reverse that?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is you can't lead unless you've been there. You can't lead people somewhere unless you've been there. Most pastors are not trained in even how to wait on a living God. Russ Dizdar, my friend and colleague, has talked about this numerous times. And when the church comes together corporately, you've got 70 or 300 or 5,000, whatever church is, people sitting there, believers, spirit-filled, right, supposedly. Mm-hmm. Spirit-filled believers in the living God. You have 30 seconds of prayer. At that moment, that pastor or an elder, in fact, see, the whole thing of the grand poobah should be eliminated. You should have an elder do it 1 week, another elder do it another week, assistant pastor, then the pastor comes up and lead the congregation in prayer, or just a lay person. Begin to pray to shut down the abortion clinic in the city. Begin to pray against the psychic down the street. Begin to pray for the racial tension to be abated. And not the pastor praying. You have different people do it every week, and people are trained in that. And then so you've got maybe 10 or 15 minutes of corporate prayer. Someone is sick. The elders come up and lay hands on that person. And no one's running around smacking people on the head. You lay hands on them indecently in an order, and you anoint them with oil, and you pray for the sick, which we're told to do in the book of James. Mm. When was the last time you saw that? You don't see it. And you bring the congregation in. No more grand poobahs. You can have your pastor doing what they're doing. I get that. But he needs to indoctrinate and teach and show and train the people and let them begin to do something. The men don't want to go because mm-hmm. we just sit and do nothing week after mm-hmm. week, right? And we're told to shut up and sit down.
Yeah,
that's all. That's all we get to do. Mm. But if we're supposed to move in the gifts of the Spirit, that would be you have corporate prayer, you have laying on of hands, you anoint the sick with oil, you begin to target places in your town. Mm-hmm. You know, you target the prostitution, you target the crack house, you mm-hmm. pray,
mm.
you pray. Well, and that's not done.
Well, listen, L.A., I've been in churches where they tell you, you know, they're going to do something and you're going to get something else. So I've been smacked in the head a few times and I get nothing. OK, next time I get smacked in the head like that, I'm going to smack them back. OK, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I say, quit smacking me, man. I ain't getting nothing. I thought, man, maybe I need to get saved or something. I mean, where's this big jolt I'm supposed to get? You know, so I'm going to smack him back. I don't care.
Look, all I know is this. Every time I've been in a corporate setting where the Spirit of a living God has shown up, It's decently in an order, and there's a holy reverence which comes over that place. No one's yelling and screaming. Most people usually drop to their knees and weep because the Spirit of the living God is convicting us, first of all, of sin, and then second of all, how we're being redeemed. It all points back to our Messiah, Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's like this whole nonsense that we see in the church today. Look, Jesus says we have a form of religion, but we deny its power. Mm. Welcome to the church in 2017.
Mm. Well, I tell you what, we got a question in here from our moderator, Jade. Says, what do you think about the Pope wanting to change the Lord's Prayer?
You can't make this stuff up. You can't make it up. You know, this translation, that translation, it's like, this guy, I really, first of all, he's a Jesuit. Mm-hmm. Second of all, he's shown, it just tells you who he is. The moment Trump announces Jerusalem, the Pope and Aragon are like best buddies all of a sudden. See, it's just, it's because the Pope will never recognize, because they're the ultimate in supersessionism. They deny Israel's mm-hmm. right to resist. They say that mm-hmm. the promises of the Jews are now to the church, mm-hmm. that Israel has no promises. Again, they don't. And if you have that view, you can't understand prophecy. You don't understand the times we're living in, where everything hinges around the time of Jacob's trouble. It's called the time of Jacob's trouble, not the time of Fred's trouble, because it has to do with Israel.
I'll tell you what, man, if I ever see the Pope, I'm going to smack him in the head and say, hey, you need to hear from the Lord. Smack. You know, I don't want nobody. Are you laughing over there?
It's just great.
I'm going to give him I'm going to give you a jolt from the Lord, man, right here. Because look, I don't want nobody messing with the Lord's Prayer. I don't care what he changes it to. I'm not going to use his version. He's got who gave him authority to write a new version?
Right. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, man, he's changing all kinds
of stuff up.
Well, then there's something about an end time. Somebody, like maybe the devil, somebody going to change the times and the seasons. Is he trying to? Is that kind of go under that heading?
Well, I think we're not there yet, but I think we could be. I mean, when you look at Obama, was really very alarming to me in the last year of his presidency as a lame duck president. Mm-hmm. But out of all the things he could focus on, the $20 trillion debt, the high unemployment. Mm-hmm. The terrorism ripping through the world and everything mm-hmm. else, he focuses on transgenderism and transgender bathrooms. That's what he focuses on. It's like, mm-hmm. what? Yeah. Are we on the same page here? Mm-hmm. Obviously. And that's, you know, changing. And the fact that, here's something to show you how you talk about changing times and changing seasons. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Supreme Court votes for gay marriage is a line in the sand, huge line in the sand that needs to be overturned. The fact that the church did absolutely nothing tells you how asleep and how anemic we really are.
Yeah. And, you know, 33 states voted in their constitutions, even here in Indiana, three times we voted that marriage is between one man and woman. And right. of course, they put some crazy liberal judge in there, throw the whole thing out. So
yeah.
But there was no backlash there. I mean, the only thing the church wants, they want to make sure they still got their 501c3, you know, tax deduction there. It's like, it was, you know, I mean, and of course, we're not going to talk about, you know, and you're right. Even now, you talk about Obama, what he did, you know, trying to help the economy. No, he's out there taking credit now saying what he did propelled our economy, which added 228,000 jobs last year. We're at 3.9, unemployment is a 3.9 GDP. And right. So the unemployment's going down and people's 401ks, the trillions have been added to the stock market. And Obama's saying, I put the trajectory, I got the economy heading in the right way. And I'm thinking, what part of getting grown men in the little girls' bathrooms propelled, you know, set the economy Nothing. Going in the right direction? Nothing. I didn't get that either. Obviously, you're confused with that.
Yeah, I mean, he basically almost dismantled the country. And had Hillary been elected, that would have been it. We would have been trillions of dollars and more. She would have raised the taxes. The people, the reason why things are surging is because Trump said we're going to have tax reform. And I don't know whether I'm going to get it, but all I know is I pay 45% of my income
wow.
To the federal state, to federal and state. That's what I pay. So, you know, it's like we were asking people for end of year donations because we've got a $14,000 debt. We borrowed money from PayPal mm-hmm. to keep our business afloat. And we owe another $14,000 and I'd like to clear it off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not, I'm not too proud. Folks, if I wasn't paying all this money to a bloated federal government, I'd have money to print books and do this and hire people. And so that's why everything's surging, because on the promise that he's going to change things, he's going to allow people to keep our money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what about 45% of your wealth that you just hand over to a bloated federal government? Guys like John McCain? Are you kidding me? Nancy Pelosi? It's unbelievable.
I don't know. But listen, I want to know, what is that big old knob-looking thing on the side of John McCain's face anyway?
I think that came from when he was beaten up in Vietnam.
Oh, oops.
Yeah.
Oops. My bad. All right. Hey, here's a question for you. Timothy Tucker asked this question from our YouTube chat. Are Bigfoot the Nephilim?
I think they are, yeah. I think they're part of a Nephilim. They have elongated skulls. They're also interdimensional. They can kind of come in and come out. We've had reports of that. I think they are a type of Nephilim. Yes, mm-hmm. I do.
Mm-hmm. There's also reports that they appear many times when there's UFOs in the area. Why is that? Are they coming from, or are they driving them?
I wouldn't say they're driving them, but look, there's a whole tunnel system that, and we know this, there are tunnels underneath the earth. And do they ride in the ships? Or are they summoned when the ships come? It's all part, in my opinion, it all points back to the dark side, all of it. All of it points back to the dark side. And we are in the midst of a cosmic war. And this cosmic war is ramping up and manifesting in ways that we've never seen. And it's only going to continue until that moment when the tipping point happens.
Yeah. I see in our YouTube chat, somebody said that Madonna bought a castle near Fatima. Are you aware of that? Is that true?
I've heard about that. Yes. Yeah.
And now, is that sort of like, I don't know if it was your teaching I was listening to, but somebody said every time there's something supernatural, the Catholics come running in there and the mountain where they put the telescope in out west. What's it? Mount? Yeah.
Mount Graham.
Was that?
No, it's a Lucifer telescope. I know what you're talking about.
Well, but anytime there's something supernatural, they try to go there and buy the area. I mean, do you see that?
Well, I mean, on some level, Fatima was dressed up in Catholic clothes. The entity became Mary. But when you go back to the 1917 records and Lucia is asked, who does the lady say she is? And Lucia basically answers, she says she's from the sky. Mm-hmm. She says she's from, this is why when you really study it, when you move it away from what you think you know, and you actually study what was there, there are two different Fatimas. There's a 1917 event with all the handwritten documents from the eyewitnesses, mm-hmm. and there's the Fatima of 1940 and forward, where it's dressed up, and it's a huge business. You go there, there is shop after shop after shop, of statues and this and rosaries and it's mm-hmm. it's crazy and pictures of the kids and all this crazy stuff.
When was the last sighting?
The last sighting in Fatima was October 13th, 1917. That was it.
Oh, okay.
There's never been another sighting at the sanctuary.
Is there anything to do with the date that means anything?
Well, what's interesting is that in occult circles, when you get into the stories of Greek mythos, that the 6 months, I forget the goddess's name or the daughter, she was taken into the underworld. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely these 6 months when the apparition, you know, was happening, when she was released from the underworld. So there's some connections that way, I think.
Mm-hmm. I saw a question come in for you, LA. It says something about why didn't you talk about Jesus on the Ancient Alien show? But did I see you explain that they actually cut that out?
Oh my gosh. Why do you think we started our Watchers series? Because everything, when you see me on Ancient Aliens, I spoke to those clowns one time for 3 hours, the next time another 3 hours.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they're not going to let me speak about Jesus. Are you kidding me? Now, in the History Channels, once again, In Search of the Lost Giants, I was able to talk about the Nephilim, but they spun that. I actually show that in my clips, the way they spun that to make it, you know, tie back into the evolutionary Darwinist theory. Mm-hmm. So that's why we started the Watchmen Chronicles and the Watcher series. That's why we're making our own films, because now we can talk and say what we want to say. And when you guess what? When you buy them, you help get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we don't sell that many of them. You know, we sell probably between 6,000 and 10,000 DVDs per episode. That should have a zero behind it. If it did, life would change. We could hire photographers to come in the field with us. I mean, everything could change. But, it's, you know, people, well, for whatever reason, and they're great films. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who watch them, they're educational. They will awaken you to the reality of a supernatural world.
And I'll tell you what, the church and everybody needs to be awakened to it. I think, you know, the Bible says that the things that are made, the things that are seen are made by the things that are not. It says the things that are not seen are more real than the things that are. And so, you know, I'm always looking to see what the supernatural importance of any event or any place I go, or anybody I talk to. I've just been more and more geared to it. I just won't let anything go that I don't, you know, I don't want to say there's, you know, a spirit or something behind every rock or anything like that, but I just feel like we're spiritual beings and our spirituality has been robbed and has been tamped down for control purposes, but yet we're spiritual beings. And that's where the fun is, really. I mean, that's where the excitement is, you know. I don't want to, I'm not going to go to any more Bean Suppers, LA. And I'm not going to get smacked in the head anymore. I'm going to be smacking back. I'm just saying. But we are spiritual beings.
I'm right there with you, man.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on out there that we need to keep an eye on and be involved with and just be a part of.
I agree. And the churches need to wake up and invite the Spirit of the Living God mm-hmm. to come in and minister to them. Instead of trying to do it on their own.
And that's really why I like the Gen 6 conference there, because I thought, man, God is raising up some real men of God to get information out there. You just cannot get in the church. We alluded to it earlier. Well, Ellie, we're getting near the end of the broadcast. Anything you talk about your DVD or your website, how people can get this? This is number one, right?
Yep. That's Fatima, mm-hmm. Miracle of the Sun or Harbinger of Deception. Fatima 2 will come out in January. You can go to thewatchmanchronicles.com or lamarzulli.net. lamarzulli.net, and everything is like right there. Got a bunch of sales on right now, and you know, folks, when you buy our products and when you know share them, show them, bring a bunch of people over, they are user friendly, I promise you. And we got people that write us and they'll watch things two or three or four times because there's so much information there, you can't get it all the first time.
Well, that is true, and I really appreciate it. It's some good viewing there, especially on that DVD. Well, LA, I appreciate you coming back on the Edge television broadcast. Can we have you back again sometime?
Absolutely. Let's do it in January when Fatima 2 comes out.
Love to. We'll get that scheduled, and I'll get in contact with you, and we'll set that up.
All right, Daniel. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
All right, you too. Merry Christmas to you.
God bless.
All right, everybody. That was LA Marzulli here on the Edge television broadcast. If you missed any of the exciting show, it will begin to replay in our main player. And after that, we'll put it in our Tune In Radio playlist and podcast the program as well. Next week, Mark Taylor and Mary Culber is going to be here talking about the Trump prophecies. And he did have, and I've got the book and I've read it, and it is very, very interesting. You do not want to miss next week's program here on the Edge television broadcast. 2 weeks, we're going to have Stephen Lancaster, and he's going to be talking about, well, he's from Monster Vision, so that'll give you some clue what we're going to be talking about. And let me tell you, there's a whole lot of monsters out there. Some people call it the swamp. I just call it Monster Central, man, because a bunch of freaks running over there in D.C. If we haven't had a guest on the program you'd like to see, drop me a line at edgeam@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many times we extract the ranting points. I rarely put them on YouTube, our YouTube channel, because YouTube, them boys over there, they don't like my ranting points, okay? They think, I get this note that said this video is not suitable for our advertisers. Why not? Man, a cowboy can't speak his mind. A cowboy can't rant. What is it they object to? So I put it on my Facebook page. There we go. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here. Thank you everyone who's watching the program. Those of you in the YouTube chat and those of you in the live chat, we appreciate everyone so much for being on the program. And we're going to be back next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Daniel Ott for The Edge. Bye-bye.